This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
My name is Amanda. I live in Minneapolis.
Hello, my name is Molly.
My name is Nikki from Los Angeles. When is the coronavirus going to stop?
My husband and I keep going back and forth about what counts as a COVID death.
Do we know where most of the transmissions are taking place?
I was wondering if it's safe to have small social distance gathering with family members who aren't in your shelter-in-place group.
We're still not sure if it even makes sense to take a vacation.
I just want to know what you think about this.
What is your advice?
Thank you.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand tonight to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. We've been answering your questions about the pandemic for the past 9 weeks, and we will have some news about what happens next for us later in the program. But for now, get your questions in. Send your questions about the pandemic and the way we live now to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. And each night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Well, drug maker Moderna says their trial vaccine has had early success with no major side effects. Healthy volunteers were given the trial vaccine and developed antibodies to fight the virus. The company plans to study the volunteers to see if the vaccine can actually prevent COVID-19. Dr. Tal Zaks is the chief medical officer of Moderna.
It works, and it's you see demonstration of neutralizing activity. So I think the major risk as I look ahead is just operationally being able to demonstrate clearly that there's safety and efficacy in a large randomized trial.
Wall Street liked that news. The Dow ended the day up nearly 4%. President Trump told reporters today he's been taking hydroxychloroquine.
A couple of weeks ago, I started taking it because I think it's good. I've heard a lot of good stories. And if it's not good, I'll tell you right, I'm not going to get hurt by it. It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it.
The FDA has warned against taking the drug for coronavirus prevention because of possible heart-related side effects. During a meeting of the World Health Organization, China pledged to donate $2 billion to global coronavirus relief. At that meeting, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar blamed the virus spread on the WHO, saying they didn't do enough early on.
We must be frank about one of the primary reasons this outbreak spun out of control. There was a failure by this organization to obtain the information that the world needed, and that failure cost many lives.
The WHO disputes the U.S. characterization. The total number of confirmed infections in the U.S. today crossed 1.5 million cases and 90,000 deaths. As more states begin to ease their strictest shelter-in-place rules, many of you are asking what parts of your old routines you can safely return to. Data about testing, infection, and mortality rates could help us figure that out, but it could take a while to get those numbers. Dr. Celine Gounder is an epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist. She's also a professor at NYU, and she's here once again to answer your questions about all this. Dr. Gounder, good to have you back.
My pleasure.
A lot of listeners are trying to figure out when they can start to ease their own personal social distancing practices. What numbers would you recommend people look at to get a sense of when it might be safer to do this in wherever they happen to live?
Well, there are a few different metrics we're looking at, and unfortunately, not every state governor, not every city mayor is looking at these metrics in the same way. Some are deciding to lift social distancing regardless of what the numbers say. But the numbers that we as public health officials are interested in looking at are, one, do you see a decline in newly diagnosed cases? Do you see a decline in hospitalizations? And do you see a decline in COVID-related deaths? And those declines should be for at least 14 days. And why 14 days? Because the virus has an incubation out to 14 days. So you really need to have sort of that lag time built in to how you look at the data. So that's number one. Number two, you also need to look at the health system capacity to deal with the resurgence in cases. And you need to deal with, do you have the appropriate testing capacity if you start to lift social distancing? And unfortunately, too many parts of the country haven't done their homework, haven't done the hard work of addressing these capacity building issues.
So those are some key numbers that people should be looking at, but there have also been questions raised about the accuracy of the numbers. What can you tell us about where things stand right now and how reliable those statistics are?
Well, some challenges. One, it's really hard to get, if you're the average citizen, to get your hands on these numbers. At least some of the state and city health departments have released some of this information on their website. So I would contact your local state or health department for some of these numbers and what their targets are. But there are some issues with, for example, the testing numbers. So I can tell you, you know, if we have a patient in the hospital who has COVID, that one person will have multiple tests, the initial test when they come in the hospital, and then we keep testing them to see when they test negative. So, you know, it's really hard to sort of sort out some of the numbers we're seeing. Is this all data from one person being tested once, or is this data from the same person tested multiple times?
Wow, interesting. Okay, well, our listeners have lots of questions about this. The first one here comes from John in Arizona.
The United States is roughly 4% of the world's population, yet we're currently around 30% of confirmed COVID cases and 28% of all deaths. What factors are creating these figures? Is it a matter of more tests administered here in the U.S., or is the actual rate of incidence that much higher here in the U.S.? If these numbers are accurate, how is that possible?
Dr. Gounder, I have to say I've had the same question myself. It seems inconceivable that this country with 4% of the world's population has about 30% of the confirmed COVID cases. And those numbers are up to date, according to Johns Hopkins University's COVID-19 tracker. How would you answer the question?
Well, I think it's a combination of a couple things. I think one is, you know, are these numbers accurate? So for the exact reasons I was describing, you know, how are they counting cases? How are they counting number of people tested? And then how do you define a case? Is it somebody who's tested positive, or is it somebody who maybe had a CAT scan that showed them to be positive, which was basically how, you know, we saw numbers go up and down in China, actually, is that they went back and forth between different definitions. But I think, you know, setting those kinds of issues aside, the fact is the U.S. really has responded very, very, very poorly to this pandemic in a way that very few other developed countries have performed so poorly. And we're seeing some of these same mistakes made in countries like Brazil now. But really, we have been at the bottom of the pack in our response. So, yeah, we're going to have worse numbers than the others.
A lot of people are looking for more information on infection rates and how they get calculated. Trevor in San Diego wants to know, what's the difference in the number of positive tests versus the number of people with COVID-19, which seems to reference what you were saying before, that one positive patient could be tested many times.
Right, that's exactly right. So those are not the same numbers, and that's why it's really important for departments of health to be very clear with the public as to which they're actually reporting. Is it the number of people who have tested positive, or is it the number of positive tests? And, you know, in the hospital, somebody might get 7, 8, 9 tests over the course of 1 or 2 months of being in the hospital. So those differences in statistics are really crucial here.
So when we say something like the total number of confirmed infections in the U.S. today is above 1.5 million cases, that's separate people, right? 1.5 million people?
Yes, that's correct. Cases is
okay.
People.
Okay. A listener in Akron, Ohio is wondering about mortality rates.
My name is Nikki, and my husband and I keep going back and forth about what counts as a COVID death and what does not. He is questioning the numbers, the accuracy of the numbers, and how they are counted.
This seems like a really important question. If an elderly person dies alone and is found days later, are they tested for COVID-19? Does that get counted? I mean, how does this work?
Well, unfortunately, many of the deaths that occur at home are not being tested. In New York City, you know, this was a major problem. We had many people dying at home during the peak of the pandemic here, and there were not specimens taken from those people for testing. We simply didn't have the capacity and unfortunately not the foresight to arrange for that. And so you're left having to compare sort of historical averages of deaths that you would expect versus what we're seeing. And so based on that, you can say, you know, there's a certain number above and beyond what you would expect.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, Adam in San Ramon, California sent this question about where people are contracting the disease.
Do we know where most of the transmissions are taking place? Are they places like grocery stores or workplaces still open with essential workers? Thank you.
As the weeks go by, are we learning more about that?
Well, this is where contact tracing is so essential, because if you're not doing contact tracing, it's very difficult to answer that question. I mean, we've all heard about meatpacking facilities, transmission happening in jails and prisons and nursing homes. Those are clearly places that we've had outbreaks. But beyond that, you know, grocery stores, liquor stores, some of these other places, we simply don't know because we haven't been collecting the data.
Hmm. As more workplaces do start to reopen, I mean, how long will it take for us to get that kind of data so that we can make smart choices informed by real scientific evidence?
Well, I would actually argue as a public health person that we should have been building up that capacity. We should have used the last couple months while we were social distancing to build up that capacity, to hire people to do contact tracing. And, you know, I honestly don't know what we were thinking.
Okay, well, let's end with a question from a young listener that I think many of us would like the answer to.
My name is Nikki from Los Angeles. When is the coronavirus going to stop?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nikki. Dr. Gounder, what would you tell him?
Oh, gosh, my niece is 4, and she keeps asking the same question as well. We don't know, unfortunately. And I think for those of us working in hospitals right now, the sad truth is for us, this is the new normal for a long time. We're looking at having to mask up and gown and glove for just about every patient for the next couple years.
Dr. Celine Gounder, epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist, thank you for answering all these questions.
Stay safe.
You too. And if you've got a question for us, call and leave a message at 202-403-0386. That's 202-403-0386. This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.